Part 2. The organization known as Equilibrium is dedicated to bringing about the end of the colonial union, Ambassador Obumwe said. We know this, but we should be aware that the end of the colonial union is not the only goal of Equilibrium. Indeed, it's not the primary goal. The primary goal is the dissolution of the Conclave, the largest single government this part of space has ever seen. To this end, Equilibrium is using the Colonial Union as a tool, and not just the Colonial Union, but Earth as well. Obumwe was speaking from the well of one of the State Department lecture theaters at Phoenix Station. This particular theater could easily seat a couple of hundred people, but at the moment held just four. Obumwe in the well, me sitting off to the side, and Colonels Abel Rigney and Liz Egan, front row center, facing Obumwe. Egan's formal title was Colonial Defense Forces Liaison to the Colonial Union's Department of State, but in the aftermath of Assistant Secretary Ocampo's betrayal of the CU, she had stepped into the role of Ad Hoc Number 2 at State, someone trusted by both the Secretary of State and the CDF brass. The closer entwining of those two entities should have filled any rational person with a sense of foreboding, but at the moment, no one seemed to blink. This was in itself a commentary of the state the Colonial Union was in at the moment. Colonel Abel Rigney, I think, didn't have an actual title. He was just that guy in the CDF, the one that went everywhere, saw everything, advised everyone, and was privy to it all. Honestly, if you wanted to cripple the CDF, and by extension the Colonial Union, all you would have to do is put a bullet into his temple. I suspect entire chunks of the Colonial Union government would simply stop working because no one would know who to talk to without Rigney acting as intermediary. Officially, Egan and Rigney were mid-level apparatchiks at best. Unofficially, they were the people you talked to when a thing needed to be done, whatever thing it was. We had a thing that needed to be done. You're saying that what happened at Khartoum is not meant to be a direct attack on the Colonial Union, Egan said to Obumwe. No, of course it was a direct attack, Obumwe replied, in the straight-ahead, blunt manner that if you were not smart, you would think was profoundly non-diplomatic. The act served its own short-term goal in that regard, but its true value to Equilibrium is long-term, what it allows the organization to build towards for its ultimate goal, the destruction of the Conclave. Walk us through it, Ambassador, Rigney said. At Khartoum, we secured a high-value prisoner, a Commander Tavan of Equilibrium. A very slight smile crossed Obumwe's face. The best way to describe him is as the Equilibrium equivalent of you, Colonel Rigney. Someone who is very well connected and often at the center of Equilibrium plans. All right. The ambassador nodded in my direction. During interrogation, Lieutenant Wilson here got Tavan to reveal Equilibrium's most recent plan, which begins with the attack on the Turbigan above Khartoum. Colonels Rigney and Egan looked over to me. Interrogation, Lieutenant? Egan said to me. I understood the implication. The information was not secured under torture or duress, I said. I used misdirection and false information to convince him that it was in his interest to cooperate.
What false information?
I told him we were going to obliterate every major Array city and industrial site on four different planets because we believe the Array are the primary movers behind Equilibrium.
Are they?
I don't have the data to speculate, I said. If you were asking me to go with my gut, I'd say the Array government offers clandestine logistical support that's difficult to prove. Certainly the Array wouldn't mind if we were out of the way. Even if they are offering support, however, going after the Array at this point won't make a difference in the immediate plans of Equilibrium. Equilibrium is and should be our primary concern at the moment. Egan nodded and looked back to Obumwe.
Continue, she said. Khartoum is one of 10 colonies who conspired to declare independence from the Colonial Union. The plan was to do it simultaneously and in doing so give the Colonial Union too many targets, against which to effectively retaliate. The longer it took us to respond to the event, the more colonial worlds would be inspired to also declare independence. The idea here is that dissolution of the colonial union would succeed in part because the CU would lack the resources to deal with the mass exodus. However, Colonel Tavan convinced the government of Khartoum to announce its independence early, arguing that it could act as the catalyst for the dissolution of the colonial union alone, and that Equilibrium would effectively serve as Khartoum's defense forces. That would benefit both Khartoum and Equilibrium, which wanted to be seen as an ally to the newly independent colonies. "Well, that didn't work out," Rigney said dryly. "No," Obomwe agreed. In fact, Equilibrium's true plan was to attack any CDF ship which responded, which it did with the Turbingen. The attack, whether it was seen by the Colonial Union as directed by Khartoum or by Equilibrium, would result in a massive response by the CDF, which it did. We sent 20 ships to Khartoum. Equilibrium did this for the specific purpose of massively militarizing the Colonial Union response to our planet's declaring independence. The next planet or planets which declare will not receive a visit from a single CDF ship as they would have done before. Instead, the CDF will send a fleet to any planet with the specific intent of overwhelming any independence movement from the beginning. Obomwe stopped for a second and looked at Egan and Rigney curiously. Is this Equilibrium assessment accurate? The two colonels looked uncomfortable.
It might be, Rigney said eventually.
Obomwe nodded. Equilibrium, through its own strategy of misdirection and false information, and its campaign to establish the Colonial Union as an unreliable source of truthful information, aided by the fact that the Colonial Union is, in fact, deeply censorious of news between colonies, plans to encourage the 9 remaining planets in the original independence scheme to stick to their plan and jointly announce. It will promise logistical and defense support, which it has no real intention of providing except for its own purposes, as it did over Khartoum. This will happen as soon as practicably possible, and of course the CDF will respond.
And then what? Egan asked.
Once the Colonial Union is fully occupied with this independence movement and has committed a substantial amount of its military force and intelligence capabilities to quash it, Equilibrium attacks.
Tax the fleet over the rebellious colony planets? Rigney said.
Well, that's just stupid, Ambassador. Equilibrium can be effective with sneak attacks, but their ships and armaments can't stand up to a prolonged battle.
They won't be attacking our fleets, Obomwe said. They will be attacking the Earth.
What? Egan said. She pushed forward in her seat, now intensely interested.
Obomwe glanced over to me and nodded.
I connected my brain pal to the theater's presentation system and popped up a visual of Earth, and above it, several dozen starships, not to scale.
Equilibrium acquires ships by pirating them, Obomwe said. The Colonial Union has lost dozens over the years. The Conclave and its constituent states have lost even more. She pointed into the graphic. What you see here is a representation of all the Conclave-affiliated ships that we know have been taken and have not as yet been destroyed in battle. There are 94 shown here, and we have to assume our estimate is low. According to Commander Tavan, the Equilibrium plan is to skip these ships into Earth space, destroy the planet's defense, communication, and scientific satellites, and then target hundreds of major population areas with nuclear warheads.
Nuclear warheads, Rigney said.
Where the hell are they getting nukes? Egan said. Who still uses them? Tavan indicated that many of them came from the stores of planets now aligned with the Conclave, Obomwe said. The Conclave doesn't allow their use as weapons, so they're supposed to be dismantled and the fissionable material disposed of. It was a trivial matter for Equilibrium to insert itself into that process and come away with warheads and fissionable material.
How many are we talking about? Rigney said. Warheads, I mean.
Obomwe looked at me.
Tavan didn't know all the specifics, I said. The ones he seemed to consider standard yield would be the equivalent to 300 kilotons. He said there were several hundred of those.
Jesus Christ.
They could do the same damage without nuclear weapons, Egan said. At this point in weapons technology, using nuclear weapons is only a step up from using the longbow. The point
is to use the nuclear weapons, Abomwe said. Not just for the immediate devastation, but for everything else that follows.
When the Romans defeated Carthage, they salted the ground there so nothing could live or grow there anymore, I said. This is the same concept, writ large.
Equilibrium would be slitting their throat by doing this, Rigney said.
If you can find their throats to slit them, I pointed out.
I think we would be motivated, Lieutenant.
Colonel, you're missing the important thing here, Abomwe said.
And what is that, Ambassador? Egan asked.
Abomwe gestured up toward the image floating there.
That every one of the ships tasked to the attack is originally from the Conclave. We are meant to believe this is an attack not by Equilibrium, but by the Conclave. We're meant to believe the Conclave has decided that the only way to deal with humanity, to deal with the Colonial Union, is to destroy the source of its soldiers and colonists once and for all, so we can never get it back, either by force or negotiation. This is meant to be the earnest of the Conclave's intent to wipe us from the universe forever.
Rigney nodded.
Yes, all right.
We would blame the Conclave, refuse its denials, assume it was behind Equilibrium all along, Egan said. We'd go to war with the Conclave, and we'd be defeated.
Inevitably, yes, Abomwe said. We are far too small to take it on directly, and even if all the colony worlds stopped fighting us for independence, or we crushed all their attempts at independence, it would still take us time to fully convert to the colonies being the well from which we draw our soldiers. And meanwhile, elements of the Conclave would be agitating for our destruction, because whether the Conclave attacked us or not, we would now be a clear and present danger to it.
We'd lose in a fight with the Conclave, I said. But that doesn't mean the Conclave would win.
Abomwe nodded. It wouldn't simply be about us attacking the Conclave. It would be the internal stresses the Conclave would face in being obliged to obliterate us permanently. It goes against every reason the Conclave was founded in the first place. It would be antithetical to the goals of General Gao.
Not to mention that of the Conclave's current leader, Hafde Sorval, I said. And she would be criticized relentlessly if she refused to deal with us. And no matter how capable she is, and she's very capable, she's not General Gao. She won't be able to keep the Conclave together through her own sheer force of will like the General could. It will fracture and die.
Which is Equilibrium's ultimate goal, Egan said.
Yes, Abomwe said. Again, our destruction is part of its plan, too, but we are mostly incidental. We are the lever Equilibrium will use to destroy the Conclave. Everything the organization has ever done, including the destruction of Earth Station, has been part of the drive toward that goal.
I don't know how I feel about the complete destruction of the Colonial Union being a side benefit, Rigney said.
It should make you angry, Abomwe said.
It makes me angry. You don't look notably angry, Rigney observed.
Colonel Rigney, I'm furious, Abomwe said. I also recognize that there are more important things for me to be and do than just be furious.
Ambassador, a question? Egan said.
Yes, Colonel.
Egan pointed to the graphic.
We know Equilibrium's plan now. We know that it plans to use our colonies and our standard responses against us. We know it plans to frame the Conclave for the attack on Earth. We know its game, its strategy, and its tactics. Isn't this now a trap we can easily step out of?
Abomwe looked over to me. There are other complications, I said. Tavan suggested to me that if it became clear the Khartoum strategy failed, or that we had thwarted their plans with the other 9 planets, or informed the Conclave of the subterfuge, that Equilibrium may simply attack Earth anyway.
For what purpose? Egan said.
Equilibrium doesn't appear to be fussy, I said. It'll take half a loaf if it can't get a full one. What I mean by that is right now its optimal plan is to distract the Colonial Union, destroy the Earth, frame the Conclave, and let us destroy each other. But if Equilibrium has to take credit for nuking Earth instead, it will, because it knows that an obviously weakened Colonial Union, an obviously weakened human race, will still force the Conclave's hand.
you have to appreciate just how many Conclave species hate humans, Obomwe said. They hated us before what we did at Roanoke. They hate us even more after it. And some of them blame us for the assassination of General Gao. We had nothing to do with that, Rigney said. But we were there when it happened, Obomwe said. We and humans from Earth. That's enough for many of them. So you're saying that Equilibrium is perfectly fine going with a Plan B, Egan said, bringing the topic back around.
We're already on Plan B, I said. Plan B went into effect the moment Rafe Duckwing stole the Chandler and brought back Secretary Ocampo. This is closer to Plan K. Equilibrium has been very good at improvisation, Colonel. It knows its limits in terms of scale and makes them advantages. Taking credit for killing Earth is not the primary goal, but it has its own advantages. It means that it has done something no other entity, no other power, has ever dared to do. Destroyed the planet that gave the Colonial Union its power. If Equilibrium plays its cards right, it could profit immensely from taking credit for killing Earth. It could gain new members and funding. It could become a legitimate power in itself. It could step out of the shadows it lives in now.
No matter what, the Earth is fucked, Rigney said.
Excuse the language, but that's the gist of what I'm hearing from you. I looked over to Obomwe.
There is another option. Tell us, Egan said. Before I do, a question for the two of you, Obomwe said. Are we agreed that the goal here is survival, not a win?
I don't understand the question, Egan said.
I don't believe that, Colonel, Obomwe said, and stared fixedly at Egan. I think you know very well what I mean. We four in this room can indulge in the luxury of being utterly honest with each other. So we don't have to pretend that we don't know that the Colonial Union, as it exists now, is headed for collapse. If we're not destroyed by Equilibrium or the Conclave, we'll tear ourselves apart. It's already happening. We don't have to pretend that we don't know the structure and organization of the Colonial Union itself is unsupportable as it's currently constructed. We don't have to pretend that there's any way to get the Earth back into the role it played for us before. We don't have to pretend that we are not staring our extinction in the face. We don't have to pretend that any petty victories or side goals are important right now. What matters is that we agree that what we do here now is for the survival of us, of humanity. Not the Colonial Union as it is now, but of our species. We four have to agree to this, or there is simply no point in continuing this meeting.
Egan and Rigney looked at each other.
We agree, Egan said. And this agreement will be supported how?
Obomwe said.
If we are agreed that we are talking about survival, are we also agreed that we do what it takes to allow survival to happen?
Ambassador Obomwe, Rigney said, tell us your plan. We'll tell you how we can make it happen.
Very well, Obomwe said. Thank you for attending this meeting, Obomwe said to the representatives of the 9 colonies who were planning, in what they believed to be secret, to announce their independence.
Attend? Hell,
said Haralal Dwivede, the representative from Huckleberry.
We were just about dragged out of our beds and forced to be here.
Several of the other representatives nodded in agreement. I do apologize, Obomwe said. Unfortunately, time is of the essence. I am Ambassador Ode Obomwe.
Why are we here, Ambassador?
Asked Nada Calderon of Umbria. Representative Calderon, if you would look around at who else is here among you, I think you will have a good idea why you are here.
The low-level muttering and complaining cut off abruptly. Obomwe was now very definitely the focus of all their attention.
Yes, we know, Obomwe said.
Of course you know,
Dwivedi spat. He was clearly of the when-cornered attack school of rhetoric.
You have the Prime Minister of Khartoum in custody. I can't imagine what you've done to him.
Obomwe nodded to me. I went to a side door in the State Department conference room we were in and opened it.
Come on in, I said.
Masahiko Okada walked out and sat down at the table with the representatives. They stared at him like he had three heads.
"Any more surprises, Ambassador Obomwe?"
Calderon asked, after she stopped staring at Okada.
"In the interest of saving us all time, allow me to be brief," Obomwe said.
"Please do," Calderon said.
"Each of your worlds is planning to jointly announce your independence from the Colonial Union. The fact that each of you is in this room right now should indicate our awareness of your plans. We are also aware that each of your governments has been in discussion, either individually or severally, with an entity called Equilibrium, which has shared information with you and has, we believe, offered each of you protection against the Colonial Union when you declare your independence."
Dwavedi opened his mouth to speak. Obomwe hit him with a hard stare.
"This is not the moment to offer up excuses or rationalizations, either for your desire for your independence or your fraternization with Equilibrium. We don't have time for it, and quite bluntly at the moment, we don't care."
Dwavedi closed his mouth, clearly annoyed.
"Equilibrium has been deceiving each of your governments," Obomwe continued, and motioned to Okada. "In a moment, Minister Okada here will detail to you how Equilibrium deceived him and his government and attacked a Colonial Defense Forces ship with the intent to pin the blame and the punishment on Khartoum and its government for the purpose of galvanizing your governments into action. Not for your purposes, representatives. Not for the freedom you believe you seek, but for its own agenda, of which your planets and their fates are mere stepping stones. With that in mind, the Colonial Union is making a request of each of you."
"Let me guess," Calderon said. "You don't want us to declare our independence from the Colonial Union."
Obomwe smiled one of her very rare smiles.
"In fact, Representative Calderon, we very much want you to."
Calderon looked uncertain for a moment and glanced around at the other representatives, who were equally confounded.
"I don't understand," she said, finally.
"We want you to declare independence," Obomwe said again.
"You want us to leave the Colonial Union?"
Dwavedi said. "No."
"But you just said you want us to declare our independence."
"Yes," Obomwe said,
and held up her hand before Dwavedi could complain further.
"We do not want you to leave the Colonial Union. It is dangerous for each of us. But we ask each of you to follow through with your plan to declare independence. We need for Equilibrium to believe that your planets are going to go through with the plan you've already arranged."
"And why is that?"
Calderon asked.
"I can't tell you," Obomwe said. "Quite obviously, your governments are not secure. We can't tell you everything. And what will happen when we declare independence? The Colonial Union, quite predictably, will overreact and fill your sky with ships in order to intimidate you."
"I'm failing to see the benefit to any of us in this plan,"
Calderon said wryly. She had, for whatever reason, assumed the leadership role for the assembled representatives.
"We want you to declare independence, but not become independent," Obomwe said. "We will respond with the appearance of force, not force itself."
"You're asking us to believe that the CDF won't crush us flat."
"If we wanted to do that, we wouldn't need to have this meeting," Obomwe pointed out.
"No. I am offering you a way out of that eventuality. Make no mistake, representatives. Any attempt to leave the Colonial Union will be met with force. We cannot afford to have your planets leave the Union, and at the risk of sounding patronizing, we are absolutely certain you don't appreciate the danger you are putting yourself into."
Obomwe motioned to Okada again.
"Minister Okada here can speak to this from experience."
"You want us to trust you. You might understand why it's difficult for us to do that."
"I'm not asking for your trust," Obomwe said. "I'm making you an offer."
"There's not much you can offer us, Ambassador, if you're already denying us our freedom,"
Representative Calderon. "Let me suggest that it's not freedom that you are looking for."
"It's not, no."
"What is it then?"
"It's control," Obomwe said.
which is what I am offering you.
Explain,
Calderon said after a moment.
You are all representatives to the Colonial Union government,
Abumwe said.
I don't need to tell you how little that actually means in terms of how the Colonial Union is administered and its relationship to your home planets. At best, you are responsible for the most minor of tasks. At worst, you are ignored entirely.
She stopped to let her comment take root. There were nods among the representatives.
That is going to change.
It has to change. The Colonial Union will need to rely on the colony worlds more than ever, including for soldiers, which it has never done before. It can no longer rule from the top down. Bluntly, it will need the consent of the governed. It will need to be ruled by the governed. It will need to be ruled by you.
There was dead silence for a moment. Then,
you're joking,
Dwavedi said.
No,
Abumwe said, looking at Calderon rather than the Huckleberry representative.
It's been agreed to in principle. At the top. What we need now is a group of representatives willing to do the work to create a system that reflects the reality of our situation with the Conclave and others, along with a truly representative government.
You want us to draft a constitution?
Calderon said, only a little incredulously.
Yes. In exchange for this little act of subterfuge with our declarations of independence?
Yes, Abumwe said.
It's that important?
Yes.
We're going to need to consult with our governments,
Dwavedi said.
No,
Abumwe said, and looked around.
I need to be clear about this.
There is no time. We already know that you plan to announce your independence in as little as a couple of weeks. We need that timetable to continue. We need everything to run as if it's already been decided. There can be no pause, no hint that anything has changed. You are your colony's representative.
Represent.
Your decision here now will commit your planet, and we will hold it to your decision.
And one other thing.
This decision must be unanimous. Either you are all in, or none of you are.
You're expecting us to create a viable system of interplanetary representative government right now?
Calderon said.
This got the faintest of smiles from Abumwe. No. Details will wait.
But you have to commit now.
How much time are you giving us?
You'll have tonight, Abumwe said. I'll be here to answer what questions I can. Okada is here to tell you about Khartoum's experience with Equilibrium. It's 11 p.m. now. By 8, I will either need your unanimous agreement or your refusal.
And if we refuse?
Then you refuse. And everything becomes much harder and much more dangerous. For everyone, Abumwe said. I'm going to leave you for a few moments. I will be back to answer questions presently.
She walked out the side door I had brought Okada in from. I followed her.
Well, that was inspiring, I said.
Of all the things I need at the moment, Wilson, your sarcasm is not one of them, she said.
It's only partly sarcasm, I said.
Do you think they'll commit?
I believe Calderon is convinced. I think she might be able to convince others.
And do you think the Colonial Union is actually going to agree to the changes you've just committed it to?
That's Rigney and Egan's department,
Abumwe said.
But none of us would be here if we didn't already see the writing on the wall.
True enough, I said.
I need you to call in Hart Schmidt,
Abumwe said. I need him to take your place in the room. I will brief him on everything.
All right, I said. What are you going to have me do?
I have two things I need you to do,
Abumwe said.
First, I need you to talk to Ocampo.
What about?
The whereabouts of Equilibrium. They fled from their base, but that hasn't stopped them from continuing their operations. We need to know where they are now.
He might not know, I said.
And he might. You need to ask him.
You're the boss, I said. What's the other thing?
I need you to go to Earth.
Oh, interesting, I said. You know they don't like us, right?
As in, if one of our spaceships shows up above the planet, they're likely to shoot it out of the sky. Not to mention it'll take me several days to get there, with no reasonable expectation of getting back once they shoot my ship out of the sky.
I expect you to solve all of these problems before you leave.
I admire your confidence in me.
Then don't disappoint me, Wilson.
Tyson Ocampo and I stood on a beach, watching the waves roll in and the seagulls circle overhead.
It's beautiful here, Ocampo said to me.
I thought you might like it, I replied.
Which beach is this?
Cotslow Beach. It's near Perth, Australia.
Ah, Ocampo said. I've never been.
Well, it's on Earth, so that's understandable, I said.
Have you ever been?
Once, I said. I went to Perth on business and had a free day. Took the train over to it and spent the day watching the waves and drinking beer. Ocampo smiled.
We're watching the waves, at least, he said.
Sorry about the lack of beer.
Lieutenant, when you're not here, the simulation I see is of a small square cell. It has three books in it, the titles of which rotate after I read them. I don't get to choose the titles. There's a single small screen on which is ported just enough entertainment material that I do not go entirely mad. Once a day, they make a track appear so that I can give myself the appearance of physical exercise. My only visitor, aside from the occasional Colonial Union interrogator, is a chatbot, which is not quite well programmed enough to give the appearance of being a person, and only serves to remind me that I am, well and truly, alone in my brain. Trust me, this beach is enough. I had nothing to say to that, so we continued watching the simulated waves of simulated Cotslow Beach tumble onto the simulated shore, while the simulated birds reeled in the sky.
I assume this is a reward, Ocampo said, for our last session. As it turns out, you were entirely correct that a trap was being laid for the CDF ship at Khartoum, I said. My ship got to skip distance in a dangerously short time. We nearly overloaded the engines and skipped directly into the attack. That was lucky timing.
The CDF didn't send one of the ships it has on standby.
With all due respect, Secretary Ocampo, you're a confirmed traitor, and you have a history of leading ships to their doom. They would not send their own ship, but they didn't mind if we played Russian roulette with ours.
I'm glad you trust me, Lieutenant.
I trust that you have nothing left to lose, Secretary.
That's not quite the same thing, is it?
No, I said. It's not. Sorry about that. Ocampo smiled again and ran a toe into the sand of the beach. This simulation was about as perfect as I could make it, and from a programming point of view was in fact a bit of a marvel. The simulation was only detailed to the degree of Ocampo's attention. Any part of the beach he wasn't looking at was a low-resolution map. Any part of the sand that wasn't directly under his toes was an undifferentiated texture mat. The beach existed as a bubble of perception around a man who himself existed as a brain in a jar.
Did you make this beach for me? Ocampo said. As a reward?
It's not a reward, I said. I just thought you might like it.
I do.
And I confess I didn't make it for you, I said. Rafe Duckween had a birthday recently. I molded it for him.
You still haven't given him a body? Ocampo asked.
His new body is ready, I said, and he can move into it any time he likes. Right now, he's decided to stay with the Chandler and pilot it from the inside. He's really very good at it now. He's done some amazing things.
I wonder how he would feel if he knew you'd given a gift you made for him to the man who caused his brain to be taken out of his body in the first place.
Actually, he was the one who suggested I do it. He told me to tell you he remembers how lonely it was and is to be a brain in a jar. He hoped this might give you some peace.
That was very kind of him.
It was, I agreed. I conveniently left out the part where Duckween told me that if I wanted I could program in a great white shark that tore Ocampo's simulated body to pieces. It would not be convenient to the current situation. Rafe might have forgiven in his fashion, but he had not forgotten.
Lieutenant,
Ocampo said.
As much as I appreciate a trip to the beach, I'm not under the impression that you're here because you and I are friends.
I need a little more information from you, Secretary, about Equilibrium.
Of course. Will you give it?
Ocampo didn't answer this. Instead, he stepped forward onto the beach, into the water that rushed up to surround his feet and make them sink just a little into the sand. Despite myself, I smiled at this. It really was a good simulation that I had thrown together.
I've been thinking about why it was I became part of Equilibrium, Ocampo said.
He looked back at me as he said this and grinned.
Don't worry, Lieutenant. I'm not going to try to make this a monologue of disillusioned nobility that you will have to politely nod through. At this point, I can admit that much of the reason I did was ambition and megalomania. That is what it is. But there was another part of it, too. The belief that the Colonial Union, however it had gotten that way, was antithetical to the survival of our species. That every other species we know had come to associate humanity with duplicity, savagery, ambitious cunning, and danger. That this is all that we would ever be to them.
And to be fair, none of the rest of them are exactly angels, I said.
True enough, Ocampo said. Although the response to that is how much of that is them dealing with us. The Conclave brought together 400 species of spacefaring beings into a single government. We can barely get any to tolerate us. It does suggest the problem is not them, but us, the Colonial Union.
I opened my mouth to respond. Ocampo held up a hand.
It's not the right time to debate this, I know. My point is this, Lieutenant. For whatever reasons, I aligned myself with Equilibrium. Independent of that, the problem of the Colonial Union remains. It's toxic to itself. It's toxic to humanity. And it's toxic to our survival in this universe. I'm going to help you, if I can, Wilson. At this point, there is no reason not to. But you have to understand that unless something happens to the Colonial Union, something big, something substantive, then all we're doing here is kicking the can just a little further down the road. The problem will still exist. The longer we wait, the worse it gets, and it's already almost as bad as it can get.
I understand, I said.
All right, then ask your question. After Da Queen attacked Equilibrium headquarters, the organization pulled out from there. Yes, the location was no longer secure, obviously. We need to know where its new headquarters is.
I don't know, Ocampo said.
And if I did know definitively, they wouldn't use it because they would have assumed that you would have extracted the location from me.
Then I would like a guess, please.
Equilibrium is a relatively small organization, but the emphasis here is relatively. It can operate from a single base, but that base has to be relatively large and also recently abandoned, so that its systems can be brought back up to operational capacity quickly. It needs to be in a planetary system that's either friendly to the Equilibrium cause, or recently abandoned, or not heavily monitored outside of core worlds.
Well, that should cut down on the number of available military bases, I said.
At least that's something.
You're limiting yourself, Ocampo said.
How? Oh. You're thinking like a soldier, and not an opportunistic scavenger, which is what Equilibrium is, or still is, for the moment.
So not just military bases, I said.
Any sort of base with the requisite infrastructure,
yes.
And not just of species obviously aligned with Equilibrium,
right.
They would know you'd already be looking at those. They'd want something that's in the Colonial Union's blind spot.
I considered this for a minute, and then I had a really, truly, stupendously far-fetched idea.
My computer simulation must have accurately replicated my eureka moment because Ocampo smiled at me.
I think someone may have thought of something.
I need to go, I said to Ocampo.
Secretary, you need to excuse me.
Of course, he said.
Not that I could make you stay, mind you.
I can leave this simulation running, I said.
Oh, thank you, he said.
I would like that. They won't keep it running for more than a couple of minutes after you leave, but I will enjoy it until then.
I could ask them to let it run longer.
You can ask, Ocampo said. It won't make a difference.
I'm sorry, I said. And despite everything Ocampo had done, I was.
Ocampo shrugged. This is how it is, he said. And I can't say that for all I've done, I don't deserve it. Still, let me put a thought in your head, Lieutenant. If that idea in your head pans out and all your plans for it succeed, then ask a thing for me.
What is it? I asked.
I was concerned he would ask for a new body, which I knew the Colonial Union would never, ever give him.
He anticipated that thought.
I'm not going to ask you to ask them for a new body. They won't do that. Institutional forgiveness never goes that far. But I have a place on Phoenix. Had it, anyway. A small summer cabin up in the mountains by a small lake. It's on 100 acres of forest and meadow. I bought it 10 years ago with the idea that it would be a place for me to think and write. I never did, because whoever does. Eventually, I thought about it as a foolish investment. I thought about selling it, but I never did. I guess I lived in hope I'd eventually make use of it. And now I never will. I won't ever see that cabin again. Really see it. He looked back out, away from the beach, into an Indian Ocean that didn't exist. If it all works out, Lieutenant, and you get what you want out of this whole adventure, then use your influence to get me that cabin, here, in simulation. I know that I'll never be out in the real world, but if the simulation is good enough, maybe I can live with that. And these days I have nothing to do now but think. Finally, I would use the cabin for what I bought it for. A version of it, anyway. Say you'll do that for me, Lieutenant Wilson. I would appreciate it more than you can possibly know.
Sedna, I said.
Colonel Rigney, who was in the small conference room with Egan, Abumway, and Hart Schmidt, frowned at me.
You're trying to get me to use my brain pal to look something up, he said.
Sedna is a dwarf planet in Earth's system, I said. More accurately, it's a dwarf planet just outside of Earth's system, at the inner edge of its Oort cloud. It's about 3 times further out from the sun than Neptune.
All right, Rigney said. What about it?
Ocampo said he didn't know where Equilibrium's new base was, but that they would likely take a base, military or otherwise, that was recently abandoned, and also one that we wouldn't think to look for, one that's in our blind spot. I used my brain pal to turn on the wall monitor in the conference room. The image of a small reddish planet popped up.
Sedna, I repeated.
It had one of the Colonial Union's oldest maintained science bases. We used it for deep field astronomy and for planetary science. Sedna's in a good place to observe Earth's entire system and the orbital dynamics therein.
I've never heard of it, Egan said.
Well, the last couple of decades, it's been largely dormant, I said. It's had a basically caretaker staff of 3 or 4 scientists on a month-on-month-off basis, mostly to monitor some very long-term observations undertaken there and to run the maintenance robots. I popped up a map of the base on the monitor. But the relevant thing here is that during its heyday, over a century ago, the base was far more active. At its peak of activity, there were more than 1,000 people there.
How do you know about it?
Hart Schmidt asked me. Well, and I'm not proud of this. Back in the day, I worked in the CDF's research and development arm, and there was a staff member I thought was a real asshole, I said. I had him transferred there.
Nice, Rigney said.
Well, he wasn't the only asshole in that scenario. I realize that now, I allowed.
Egan pointed to the base map. We don't have a caretaker staff there anymore?
No, I said. After Earth broke off formal ties with the Colonial Union in the wake of the Perry incident, and here I allowed myself a small smile at the idea of my old friend precipitating the greatest political crisis the Colonial Union ever had, we abandoned the base. Partly for political reasons, since we didn't want the Earth to feel like we were lurking on their frontier. Partly because of economics.
So, a large, recently abandoned base, dead square in our blind spot, Rigney said.
Yes, I said. It's not the only large, recently abandoned base that the Colonial Union or the CDF has, or that's out there generally. I'll create a list of sites we should survey, but if I were going to lay my money down on a site, it would be this one. We should check that out right away. Discreetly, obviously.
Well, are you busy?
Yes, he is, Abumwe said. I have another immediate task for him. I need him on Earth right away.
Rigney turned to Abumwe. And you were going to tell us about this when exactly?
I just told you, Abumwe said. Prior to this, I have been babysitting 9 representatives, getting them to agree to our terms. How is that going?
Egan asked.
As well as can be expected. The representative from Huckleberry is complaining, but the representative from Huckleberry is a complainer. The others see the opportunity here and are working on him. We'll have an agreement on time.
Good. And you will need agreement on your end, Colonel.
Egan and Rigney looked at each other. It's in process, Egan said. That doesn't sound as optimistic as I would like. It will get done. Right now, the question is how messy it will have to be.
I'd still like to talk about Lieutenant Wilson going to Earth, Rigney said. We can't send a ship there. Not now. I have a solution to that, I said.
Well, sort of.
Sort of, Rigney said. It involves a bit of technology that we sort of abandoned a few years ago.
Abandoned why?
When we used it, there was a slight tendency to, explode.
Explode? Hart said.
Well, explode maybe isn't the most accurate term.
What actually happens is much more interesting.
As I floated over the surface of the planet Earth, a thought came to me. One day I'd like to visit this planet without having to toss myself down its atmosphere. The small wireframe sled I was currently sitting in was the size of a small buggy and entirely open to space. Only my combat suit and a small supply of oxygen kept the vacuum of space from eating me whole. Behind me in the buggy was an experimental skip drive, one designed to take advantage of the relative flatness of space at the Lagrange points of 2 massive objects, say a star and its planet, or a planet and its moon. The good news is that the theory behind this new type of skip drive checked out, which meant that if this new drive was reliable, it could revolutionize how space travel happened. The bad news was that despite our best efforts, it was only 98% reliable for masses under 5 tons, and the failure rate went up in a chartable curve from there. For a ship the size of a standard colonial frigate, the success rate dropped to a very unsettling 7%. When the drive failed, the ship exploded. And when I say exploded, I mean interacted catastrophically with the topography of space-time in ways we're not entirely able to explain. But explode gets the gist of it, particularly with regard to what would happen to a human caught in it. We could never fix it, and the Colonial Union and the Colonial Defense Forces had a strange aversion to having their ships potentially explode 93 times out of 100. Eventually, the research was abandoned. But there were still the small, very light vehicles we created with the prototype engines attached to them, currently stored in a warehouse module of Phoenix Station. They would be the perfect way for me to get to Earth, both in a hurry, because I would only have to travel as far as the nearest Lagrange point, and undetected, because the sled was very small and could skip very close to the atmosphere of the planet. It was, in short, perfect for the mission. As long as I didn't explode. I did not explode, which, frankly, was a relief. It meant the hard part of my trip was over. Now all I had to do was let gravity do its work and just fall to the ground. I unlatched myself from the sled and pushed off, getting distance from it. Its fate would be to burn up in the upper atmosphere. I did not want to be there when it went. My own trip through the atmosphere was thankfully uneventful. My nanobotic shield held perfectly well, the turbulence was mostly tolerable, and my descent through the lower reaches of the atmosphere was smartly managed by my parachute, which landed me, light as a feather, in a small park on the Virginia side banks of the Potomac River, outside of Washington, D.C.
As the nanobots that comprised my parachute disassociated into dust, I reflected on the fact that I had become a little jaded about falling to the surface of a planet from space. This is my life now, I thought. I accessed my brain pal to confirm the local time, which was 3:20 a.m. on a Sunday, and to confirm that I had landed near where I wanted to be, Alexandria, Virginia, in the USA.
Wow,
someone said, and I looked around. There was an older man lying on a bench. He was either homeless or just liked sleeping in the park. Hello, I said.
You just fell from the sky, he said.
Brother, you don't know the half of it, I replied. I came across who I was looking for several hours later, having brunch at an Alexandria restaurant not too far from her home, which I did not visit, even though I knew where it was, because, come on, that's rude. She was sitting by herself on the restaurant patio at a two-seater table near the patio's sidewalk railing. She had a Bloody Mary in one hand and a pencil in the other. The former she was drinking, the latter she was applying to a crossword puzzle. She was wearing a hat to block the sun and sunglasses, I suspect, to avoid eye contact with creeps. I walked up and glanced down at the crossword puzzle.
32 down is paprika, I said.
I knew that, she said, not looking up at me. But thanks anyway, random annoying dude. Also, if you think butting into my crossword puzzle is a good way to hit on me, you should probably just keep walking. In fact, you should just keep walking anyway.
Oh, that's a fine hello to someone who saved your life, I said. Twice.
She looked up. Her mouth dropped open. Her Bloody Mary slipped out of her hand and hit the ground.
Shit,
she said, flustered at the spilled drink.
Well, that's better, I said.
Hello, Danielle. Danielle Lowen of the United States State Department stood up as a waiter came to pick up her spilled drink. She looked me over.
It's really you, she said.
Yes, it is. She looked me over again.
You're not green,
she said. I smiled. I thought it might make me stick out.
It's throwing me, she said. Now that I see you without it, I recognize how disgustingly young you look. I hate you.
I assure you it's only temporary.
Will you be trying purple next?
I think I'll stick with the classics. The waiter had finished cleaning up the spilled drink and broken glass and ducked away. Danielle looked at me.
Well, are you going to sit down or are we going to keep standing here awkwardly?
I'm waiting for an invitation, I said. When we left off, I was told to keep walking. Danielle grinned.
Harry Wilson, will you have brunch with me?
I would be delighted, I said, and stepped over the railing. When I did, Danielle came over to me and gave me a fierce hug and a peck on the cheek.
Jesus, it's good to see you, she said.
Thank you, I said. We both took our seats.
Now, tell me why you're here,
she said after we sat down.
You don't think it's just to see you? I asked.
As much as I would like to, no, she said. It's not like you live down the road.
She frowned for a moment.
How did you get here anyway?
It's classified.
I'm close enough to stab you with a fork.
I used a very small experimental craft.
A flying saucer?
More like a space dune buggy.
A space dune buggy doesn't sound very safe.
Oh, it's perfectly safe. 98% of the time.
Where did you park it?
Oh, I didn't. It burned up in the upper atmosphere and I did a jump the rest of the way down.
You and your jumps, Harry. There are easier ways to visit the planet Earth.
At the moment, there's really not, I said. At least not for me. The waiter returned with a new Bloody Mary for Danielle, and she ordered for the both of us.
I hope that's all right, she said, of the ordering.
You know this place better than I do.
So, you dropped in. Tell me why.
I need you to get me in to speak to the U.S. Secretary of State.
You need to speak to my dad.
Well, what I really need to do is speak to the entire United Nations, I said. But for the very short term, I will settle for your father, yes.
You couldn't send a note?
This isn't really something I could have put into a note.
Try it now.
All right,
I said.
Dear Danielle Lowen, how are you?
I am fine.
The group that destroyed Earth Station and made it look like the Colonial Union did it is now planning to nuke the surface of your planet until it glows and frame the conclave for it. Hope you are well. Looking forward to rescuing you in space again soon. Your friend, Harry Wilson.
Danielle was quiet for a moment.
All right, you have a point, she said finally.
Thank you.
That's accurate? She asked. The part about Equilibrium planning to use nuclear weapons against the Earth?
Yes, I said. I have all the documents and data with me. I tapped my temple to indicate my brain pal. The information is not yet 100% confirmed, but it comes from sources we can verify.
Why does Equilibrium want to do that?
You're going to hate the reason, I assure you.
Of course I'm going to hate it. There's no good reason to nuke an entire planet.
It's not really about Earth, I said. Equilibrium is pitting the Colonial Union and the Conclave against each other in the hope they'll destroy each other.
I thought they had a different plan for that, one that didn't involve the Earth.
They did. But then we found out about it, so they changed their plans to include you.
They'll kill billions here just to make the two of you fight up there.
That's about right. Danielle glowered.
This is a fucked up universe we live in, Harry.
I've been telling you that for as long as I've known you.
Yes, but before this, I could still believe you might be wrong about it.
Sorry. It's not your fault, Danielle said. It might be the Colonial Union's fault. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is, if you go back far enough. You're not entirely wrong.
No, I'm not. The Colonial Union...
I held up a hand. Danielle paused. You know you lecture me about the Colonial Union every time I see you, I said. And every time I see you, I tell you that you and I don't really disagree. If it's okay with you, I'd be fine with just having this bit of our interaction tabled as read, so we can move on to other things.
Danielle looked at me sourly. I like ranting about the Colonial Union.
Huh, I'm sorry, I said. By all means, please continue.
It's too late for that, she said. The moment's gone.
Our food arrived.
Now I'm not hungry, Danielle said.
Yeah, it's difficult to keep an appetite in the face of global nuclear extinction, I said. I carved into a waffle.
You don't seem to be having a problem, Danielle observed dryly.
But then it's not your planet.
It certainly is my planet, I said. I'm from Indiana, but not recently.
Recently enough, I assure you, I said. I took a bite of waffle, chewed it, and swallowed it. The reason I can eat is because I have a plan.
You have a plan.
That's why I'm here.
And you thought up this plan on your own, did you?
No, Ambassador Obomwe thought it up, I said. Most of it. I helped in the margins.
Don't take this the wrong way.
Oh, this is going to be good, I said, and took a drink of my orange juice.
But the fact it's Obomwe who thought up this plan is more reassuring than if you thought it up.
Yes, I know, I said. She's a grown-up.
Yes, Danielle said, whereas you look like my kid brother.
Despite the fact I'm older than you and Obomwe combined.
Scratch that. You look like my kid brother's distractingly hot college roommate. And please stop telling me you're old enough to be my grandfather. The cognitive dissonance really ruins it for me.
I grinned. You seem to be processing the end of days pretty well, I said.
Do I? Danielle said. Yes, well. Rest assured that the moment the flirty banter stops, I'm going to be well and truly losing my shit, Harry.
Oh, don't, I said. Remember, we have a plan from a responsible grown-up.
And what does this plan entail, Harry?
Well, several small things and one very big thing, I said.
And what's that?
The Earth trusting the Colonial Union.
To do what?
To save you.
Ah, Danielle said. I can already tell you that's going to be a tough sell.
And now you know why I'm here instead of sending you a note, and why I'm talking to you first.
Harry, Danielle cautioned, just because we like each other as people doesn't mean that my father or anyone else will listen to you.
Of course not, I said. But us liking each other and me saving your life twice is enough to get my foot in the door, and then the plan will take over.
It better be a good plan, Harry.
It is, I promise.
What else are you going to need besides us trusting you?
One of your ships, I said. And if you're not too busy, you.
Why me?
Because we're going to go talk to Hafde Sorval, the head of the Conclave. You've been head of a mission to the Conclave very recently. If we get an agreement down here, we have things to talk about to her up there.
The Conclave's officially not talking to you right now.
Yes, I know. We have a plan.
A bumway again?
Yes.
All right,
Danielle said, and got out her PDA. What are you doing?
I'm calling Dad.
Well, let me finish brunch first.
I thought this was a matter of some urgency, Harry.
It is, I said. But I fell from the sky today. I could use a couple of waffles.